It wasn't the dying that scared him. It was the living that was a kind of waking hell. It was in the dark of his cell that Haytham could no longer run from what the boy had said on the steps outside the Hanging Gardens. He was a battering ram. He was a forest fire. He was a boulder thundering down a mountain. Heaven help anything that got in his way. Amitha, Lee, the old woman and her boys, and now, if he didn't move on soon, Jake and Sarai. He should have stayed dead. What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode where we last left off after being warned by Randall not to go back to the edge. Lee nearly drowns trying to rescue Haytham after the brawler jumps into the river. If you missed that episode or any other, I will have a link to the full playlist down in the episode description so you can check that out there. There should also be links to a couple of recap videos down there just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. All right, that is enough out of me. Let's get down to the good stuff. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Colosseum.
That's it. Eat up now. No, I insist. Here, take another loaf as well. And butter, you need butter.
Haytham tried to tell her no through a mouthful of soup and barley bread, but the rancher's wife was already scuttling over to the cabinet in the far corner of the shack.
What's bread without butter, eh?
The shack was stifling from the fire blazing in the hearth. Every time she saw either of her house guests shiver, Sarai insisted on adding another log to the inferno. Both Haytham and Lee had been stripped to their small clothes and swaddled in blankets. Both the boys' clothes and the ratty canvas pants the jailers had given Haytham were draped over the mantle to dry. Haytham kept an eye on them for fear that the rancher's wife might again try her trick of setting his effects on fire. He was loath to impose on their hospitality, and certainly to raid their cupboards, but his stomach was a bottomless pit, and he eagerly accepted the butter, and another barley loaf, and a fourth bowl of soup, with a murmured thank you. Sarai waved off his thanks.
"I'd be a fine model of seed and charity to turn you out on your bums with empty bellies, now wouldn't I?"
"You've pulled us out of the river," Lee said with a sideways look at old Jake. "You've already gone above and beyond, both of you." The rancher grunted. He was sitting on the corner of their ancient feather bed, his features knit into a resting scowl as he scrutinized the tiny wooden figurine he was carving with a penny knife. Every time a piece of shaving dropped between his feet, Sarai swatted it into an old tin dustpan with an expert flick of her broom. Haytham didn't remember being pulled out of the river, hardly remembered anything from the moment he dove below the surface. The cold had driven out every thought except one. His first sliver of memory was of the old man pumping at his chest with arms like planks of driftwood and of vomiting half the river all over his trousers. He'd carried Haytham back to the ranch slung over the rump of his nag and gave him a nip of whiskey for the warmth. The cheap liquor burned going down, but it helped him find his feet, and Jake and the boy had walked him into the shack and plunked him into one of the two chairs with stick-thin legs on either side of the eating table. Sarai had gasped when she saw the scabs and bruises layered over his chest, his back, his face, any exposed bit of skin, really. She'd of course stepped out to give him and the boy privacy while they peeled off their drenched clothes and tied the scratchy blankets around their waists.
"Oh, Haytham,"
she'd said with her hand over her mouth.
"What have they done to you?"
He was still piecing that together for himself. Like the river, his memories of the jail came in disjointed slivers. The beatings, the darkness, the beatings, the watery gruel they fed him from a sponge on the end of a stick. The beatings. Old Longknives had tried to pry names out of him with a special kind of gusto. When Haytham refused to give any, the torturer had settled for prying off his fingernails instead. Worse than the beatings, if that was possible, was the black. Endless hours in a dazed semi-stupor, for it was impossible to get anything approaching real sleep with his arms outstretched and his own weight tugging at his dislocated shoulder until it felt like the joint was made of molten lead. The image that branded itself on the black, hour after hour with increasing vivid detail, was of Amitha. He saw her tied up the way he'd found the girl under the jail, maybe in a cell under the keep where White Rose could take her whenever he pleased. The beatings were a kind of mercy, really, because for a few hours at a time, he didn't see her lying there in the darkness, screaming and thrashing with the bastard hunched over her. He'd bitten off the guard's fingers, hoping to goad the jailer into gutting him, anything to make the vision stop. It wasn't the dying that scared him. He'd come as close as any, more than once, and faced it without blinking. No, it was the living that was a kind of waking hell. It was in the dark of his cell, stifling during the day and bitter cold at night, that Haytham could no longer run from what the boy had said on the steps outside the Hanging Gardens. He was a battering ram. He was a forest fire. He was a boulder thundering down a mountain. Heaven help anything that got in his way. Amitha, Lee, the old woman and her boys, and now, if he didn't move on soon, Jake and Sarai. He should have stayed dead. It had been a relief, between the beatings and the black, knowing that every hour that crawled by brought him closer to the end. Long Knives had tried to intimidate him with it, but quickly he'd abandoned the tactic when it failed to move the brawler. Was it really only this morning that they'd opened his cell door and unchained him? He'd collapsed onto his hands and knees and croaked, "Is it time?" The jailers assured him that it was. He didn't know when the switch had happened. It was still dark when they'd led him outside and scrubbed the filth off him with rough sponges that tore open many of the scabs he'd earned since his arrest. They'd shaved him roughly with a blunt razor that made his cheeks bleed, but he'd suffered without complaint. Before they moved him back inside, they'd let him eat with his own hands, a crust of bread, beans, and a scrap of meat that was mostly gristle. That was the last he'd seen, for they put the sackcloth over his head before they marched him inside. It was the presence of the other prisoners that told him something was amiss. The jailers had pushed him roughly into a dark room, and he'd felt his way over bony arms and stick-thin legs until he reached a wall. They were murmuring to each other. They were frightened and confused, and Haytham assumed they were all to be hanged together. Again, that sense that there was something else afoot pricked him when they'd loaded him and the others into the back of the wagon. The long, ritualized walk from the jail to the gallows was a fundamental part of any execution. The other prisoners were still whispering to each other. "If anyone makes a peep," warned a gruff voice that he later identified as the smuggler Pharos, "I'll cut off his bits and use them for a gag." They never got the chance to find out if the threat was sincere. The boy was studying him from across the table, eating his soup and answering the old woman's questions mechanically with vaguely believable lies. "We're pit fighters," he'd said between bites to explain all the bruises. "Well, he is. I'm still learning. With brawling being banned at the edge and all, we're moving down into Larkspur."
"And how's it you ended up in the river well east of Larkspur?"
the rancher grunted. "We're touring through the villages. Can't really expect anyone to show up to watch a fight when they don't know about it yet, eh?" Jake grunted. He looked up from his carving at Haytham.
"And what, you just decided to go for a swim?"
"That's enough, Jake,"
his wife muttered. The old man's gaze made Haytham's nape prickle.
"I fell,"
he replied, lifting his bowl to his lips to drink.
"He'd had a few too many,"
Lee added, interrupting the rising tension between the rancher and the brawler.
"We both had, and this damn fool..." "Sorry, Mom." "And Haytham sees a child's coracle tied to a jetty, and he thinks, well, I fancy a ride. So he jumps in, makes it about 50 feet downriver before capsizing, and before I know it, I'm chasing him along the bank, hoping he doesn't get pulled under."
He paused to take a long pull from the flagon of milk Sarai had warmed for him on the hearthstones.
"It's a good thing you came when you did, sir," he told the rancher. "I was in the water before I realized I can't swim worth a damn. Sorry, Mom."
"So you stole a child's boat?"
"Jake,"
the old woman warned. Haytham fixed the boy with a look of loathing before he turned to the rancher. Lee's eyes twinkled with mischief.
"I plan to return the boat."
Jake plunked his half-carved figurine on the windowsill beside his bed and stood up. He kept the penny knife.
"Sarai, I'd like a word with you outside, if you'll excuse us,"
she said, her face flushing as she followed her husband out.
"I'm sorry,"
she mouthed before closing the door behind her.
"I don't know why you have to be such an ass,"
she continued outside, her voice only slightly muffled by the ill-fitting door, which had a three-finger gap above the threshold. Haytham wasn't trying to eavesdrop, but it was hard not to. Neither he nor the boy spoke as the rancher snapped,
"It's not being an ass to want to know how he ended up in the river. He almost pulled me under."
Lee was staring at them through a gap in the moth-eaten curtains, his loaded spoon paused halfway to his mouth, dripping broth on the table.
"He was unconscious. You heard the boy. He'd been drinking. It's hardly his fault." "What, you believe that rubbish?"
the old man rejoined.
"A coracle? And I don't know about you, but I've never seen a pit fight where one brawler starts pulling the fingernails off the other."
Lee's eyes flicked to the scabs on the brawler's fingertips. Haytham grit his teeth and hid them in a fist. Sarai didn't say anything, and Haytham caught himself straining to hear as the rancher dropped his voice by half.
"I don't want them here, sir. You know as well as I, nothing good comes down from the stair."
A long moment passed before his wife replied, also in a low voice,
"Can we at least put them up for tonight? He nearly drowned. You know what the book says about giving aid to strangers."
"And what about strangers bringing a whole heap of trouble to our door?"
"Cyrus himself was a stranger once."
"That's not Cyrus in there,"
he said coldly. Sarai didn't say anything. Lee let his spoon splat into his bowl. He met the brawler's eye.
"What do we do?"
he mouthed. Haytham stood and crossed to the hearth. The boots he'd taken off the dead outlaw were still wet, but his canvas pants were stiff and dry. He flung the boy his own clothes, which were warm to the touch.
"You have a lovely heart,"
he heard the old man mutter through the door,
"and I suppose we can keep them for one night. But whatever the book says, I'm looking out for this family first."
Whatever else he would have said was interrupted by a rumble of hooves, and through the sliver of window between the curtains, Haytham saw the rancher slip away. A moment later, Sarai opened the door, dabbing her eyes on the edge of her sleeve.
"I hope you're not thinking of leaving,"
she said, shielding her eyes with her hand as Haytham pulled on his canvas pants.
"We've got to be on," Lee explained, poking his head through the neck of his tunic. "There's a bout in 2 days in Larkspur, and we have to hit every village west of here before..."
"You can at least stay the night,"
the old woman insisted. "It's over a lead to the next village over. You wouldn't get there until after midnight."
She was still covering her eyes. Haytham stepped across the hard-packed dirt floor and gently lowered her hand with his.
"You're a credit to the faith,"
he murmured. Color rose to her cheeks, and he saw her eyes welling with fresh tears. They slipped out soon after, though not before the rancher's wife had filled a sack with loaves and cheeses and stuffed it into Lee's hands. She tried to give Haytham one of Jake's old shirts, and the boy his shoes, but they refused. He was thinking of the row that would be sure to follow if the rancher came home to find his clothes chest picked clean. The compromise they struck was that Haytham took the scratchy blanket, which the old woman insisted she had planned on throwing out anyway.
"We only ever use it to keep the horses warm in winter,"
she told them in what Haytham was sure was a lie. He thanked her again and kissed her on the cheek, and even then they weren't allowed to leave until they promised to stay longer if they passed this way again. The night breeze knifed across the hardpan, spitting grit in their eyes as soon as they stepped out. After the rustic warmth of the rancher's shack, it set them both shivering, and the brawler wrapped the blanket tighter around his bare upper body, grateful for the old woman's overbearing hospitality. It was too dark to see the posts that framed the homestead's entrance in the meager light that shone between the moth-eaten curtains of the shack, but he remembered from the last time he'd been here, and the boy's feet scuffed the dirt behind him as he hurried to keep up. He paused when they reached the road, the rush of the Jackson loud enough to drown out something the boy muttered as he drew up alongside him. He looked east and saw the faint pinprick glow a hair above the dark horizon, with a straight line of two or three other fairy lights from other villages along the river to mark the way there. He remembered the first time he'd seen it that way, the first time the Halfpenny Spider had given him that same ultimatum, exile or death, and he'd sworn then to come back and take back what was his. He spat in the water. If only he'd known then that he would waste his chance. If only the seer had told him when she'd dreamt his futures. The rumble of men's voices rose above the river noise, and several torches appeared in the darkness upriver. Old Jake was leading them, the torches throwing long shadows in the creases of his craggy scowl. He was flanked by two men wearing cloaks and leathers, and a third who'd thrown on a rust-spotted breastplate over his nightshirt. All of them but the old man were armed. They hadn't seen them yet. Jake and the others were still 50 yards or more from the homestead's entrance. Haytham caught the boy by the crook of his arm and bobbed his head west. He thought he saw Lee hesitate.
They found the bodies,
the brawler muttered. The boy nodded and slipped past him, west along the road. Haytham trailed him, lifting his feet high to keep from scuffing the hard pan until the village had faded to another pinprick behind them. Haytham watched him walking a few paces ahead of him. The way he felt about the boy was complicated. He was still angry over the business with the fat man. After Elias's betrayal, Haytham's sensitivity to broken loyalty was raw and bloody. It probably always would be. But 15 days in the black had given him time to turn the matter in his hands over and over until the sharp edges had broken off. Would he have done anything different in the boy's place? Would any of them? There were 15 men dead, half a league to the south, all to save him. There was another man who had swung from a gibbet only a few hours before, wearing Haytham's name around his neck. And then there was the business of breaking Amatha out of the jail. 15 days to think about what they might have done differently, how they could have gotten out faster, how the boy could have made the difference between freedom and failure. The feeling he'd come to with regard to the boy wasn't quite forgiveness, but it rhymed. He'd stopped walking. By then, they'd been going for a quarter of an hour since the village. Lee noticed after a dozen steps and turned. Haytham could barely make out his features in the dark.
Larkspur is 2 days from here, the brawler muttered. You can disappear there.
I thought... the edge. Elias. Haytham didn't say anything. His shoulders were slumped. So what? That's it? You're giving up?
You heard the sellsword. He'll kill you.
There was a boulder nearby, half buried in the clay. He sat on it and started taking off his boots.
No one else is dying for me.
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the thief creep toward him. I need to talk to you about something. His first boot popped off and nearly tumbled into the water. I saw you, murmured Lee. In the water. You were holding on to that rock. That part, he remembered. It was with dull horror that he'd realized what the smuggler's intention was with the prisoners as they'd zigzagged down the cliff. He wasn't afraid of being made a slave. What cut him to his bones was realizing that it wasn't over. No oblivion. He'd made a decision. As he'd knelt there among the prisoners with his wrists chained, he decided to take the death he'd already accepted. If he caught them by surprise, he could take down two or three of the slavers before the others cut him to pieces. And then, oblivion. Only that had turned to too, hadn't it? Randall and the others had made short work of the outlaws, and the ember of hope that flared to life, that there was still a chance of getting to Elias, had been pissed all over. He'd have fought the sellsword until Randall gave up and gutted him if it hadn't been for the boy. He didn't trust the Qadari not to slit Lee's throat in revenge, which left the river. He pulled off his other boot and let his toes squelch in the wet clay.
This is where we part ways, boy.
I'm not leaving. Haytham tossed the boots toward him.
They might be a bit big, but...
I'm not leaving. The boy picked up the boots and flung them back at him. If you want to throw yourself in the river, you can look me in the eye. He did. He stood and approached the boy, whose jaw was tight and hands were fists. He was nearly of a height with Haytham, and he met his gaze without blinking.
I'm sorry, Lee,
whispered Haytham. He gave the boy his back and slipped into the river. He was still at ankle depth, strands of riverweed trailing off his ankles, when the boy called out to him, nearly shouting to be heard above the rushing water. What was any of this for? He could just barely make out the featureless orb of Lee's face out of the corner of his eye. You've been given chance after chance after chance, and you're just... He pointed at the water. Would it have been better if they'd hanged you?
Maybe,
muttered Haytham, and turning, added,
You said it yourself. I leave ruin wherever I go. You am Paul.
He counted them on his fingers.
There's 15 dead out on the hard pan.
Rapers and cutthroats, they all made their choices.
And I'm making mine. It ends here.
You're not a martyr, the boy spat. Do you think any of us who swam through for you, me, Paul, Amatha. Do you think if either of them were standing here, they'd tell you to pitch yourself in the river? You're a coward. Hatham felt his hackles starting to rise, and he willed himself not to knock the boy flat. You're not a plague ship, Lee continued. He was standing at the edge of the water just outside of swinging distance. People don't get hurt because of what you are. They get hurt because you chose and keep choosing vengeance over everything else. He was right. Hatham had survived the night Elias had stabbed him, but he'd only ever been half alive after that. What was it that the bastard had said when he came to his cell? The horizon wasn't wide enough. You never told me what you planned on doing after, the boy murmured. I don't believe you came back to the edge believing there was an after. He took a step into the water. What would Amatha say if she were standing here? Would she tell you to die or to move on? Hatham's throat was tight.
I can't, he croaked. It's been 7 years. It's all I had, knowing I'd come back for him.
All this time, it had kept him going. In the early years, he would sometimes wake in a cold sweat, dreaming that he'd come home to find that Elias had already died.
I can't walk away, knowing he's out there. Knowing he won.
Lee looked at him in the eye for a long moment. It must be terrible to live in your head. Hatham chuckled mirthlessly and turned toward the water. The boy stepped up alongside him. It was a while before he spoke. You know, I've saved your life now how many times? He counted them on his fingers. There was the dram house, the street, and the sewer, and now the river. Of course, you did pull me out of the fire at Paul's, and the outlaw.
Don't forget trying to sell me out.
Sure. He docked another finger. I think that still puts me up one, Lee told him, wagging his extended finger. You owe me your life. And in the time I've known you, you never seemed like the man who runs out on his debts, but maybe I was wrong about you. He could feel the scowl creeping across his cheeks. He looked over at the boy, who wore an impish expression, still holding up the one finger.
What do you want?
Easy. I need you to kill an old enemy of mine. Elias Whiterose. Have you heard of him? The brawler didn't laugh. He nodded east toward the city.
You heard Randall. He's watching the gates.
What if I could get us in without going through the gates? Hatham didn't respond. He could feel a curl of smoke beginning to rise off that lonely coal deep in his belly. Lee walked out of the water. He found the brawler's boots where he'd thrown them and slapped a bit of dust off the toe. He was grinning. He plunked the boots down on the boulder and started east up the road. Choice is yours, Reaper. His voice was nearly drowned out by the river noise. Jump in that river, or put on your boots. He didn't wait for a reply. Before he disappeared into the dark, Hatham could have sworn he heard the boy whistling. Thank you guys so much for listening. It really is a privilege to be able to share this whole thing with you. As always, it is a huge help if you leave a like or a comment on the video. And if you're listening on podcasts, you could do me a favor by leaving a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, that is enough out of me. I will catch you all next week. Same time, same place. I'll see you then.